We have some Bach, and it's Bach live from our performance studio this afternoon. Merity Duddleston's there, and she has a special guest today. Merity?
Thank you, Jack, and yes, we do. I am here with classical guitarist Michael Pohl, who is going to bring us music from his seven-string guitar based on suites that J.S. Bach wrote for the lute. So we're going to be hearing some of those this afternoon. We're, by the way, streaming on Facebook Live. If you'd like to listen, go to our website, follow the link for Facebook Live, or just go to our Facebook page. Michael, thanks for coming.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, Merity.
I know you live in London now, and you've lived there for the last 6 years, but you're actually from the Philadelphia area, right?
Yes, I grew up right by the Art Museum in Philadelphia, and then my parents moved to Bryn Mawr, and so I spent a lot of my life there.
And for the last 6 years, you've been in London, but you've also, you're at the Guildhall School of Music, where you're a fellow.
Yes.
And you have actually been playing the guitar in earnest since you were a teenager.
Yes.
And you fell in love with these Bach suites when you were young. Please tell us about that.
So I had been given these some movements of these suites by my wonderful teacher called Emiliano Pardo, who still lives locally here in Philadelphia. And from that, I knew that I really loved these works. And so it was a few years ago that I thought it was time to go back to them, that I was looking at the scores, and I realized that if you just add one additional string to the guitar, so that's a low string below the normal low E of the guitar, that you can play a lot of the counterpoint as Bach wrote it on a guitar.
Ah, okay.
So that was the genesis of this project for me. And then from that, this grew into, first it was an idea to make the arrangements, and then from the arrangements, I started having to do research, and then with arrangements and research, I then decided to start playing them, and then when I played them, it became a recording, and that's how we ended up with a Kickstarter campaign, and then from recording, it became recording and community concerts, and then from community concerts and recording, it was picked up by a record label, and then it was a record and community concerts and a recording.
And now you have an album out called
Yes.
Seven String Bach.
Yes.
It started with the Kickstarter campaign that grew into something that's sort of bigger. And it was just released in April. You're going to be playing selections from your album. Tell us what the first one is.
So the first one is the Prelude and Presto from Bach's suite BWV 996 in E minor. It's an interesting Prelude and Presto because the prelude is in the style of a French overture, but the entire suite is not all French. It shows that this dance suite as a form was much more cosmopolitan than perhaps people realize at first look. He was mixing dance styles from all over Europe, and it's showing the influences that he had, even though he was a relatively small-town kid from suburban Thuringia. That he was soaking up influences from the French court, which meant people like Lully's music, also from northern Italy and from around Germany. And these influences are all brought to bear on this suite. And the presto is particularly interesting since it's like a fugue in that it has imitative writing throughout, but all of the entrances come in stretto. So they come before the theme has a chance to work itself out fully. So it's this incredible compositional working out of how to make all these entrances work, coming in essentially at the wrong time all the time.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You know, before we came in here, you were preparing to do this, to play today. And one of the things you were doing is you were getting your fingers, your nails ready. I know it sounds strange, but what did you have to do? You were filing?
Yes. So I was filing, and then I was sanding, and then polishing. So the nail is a little bit like a crystal. And it needs to be smooth on all sides because we make the sound at the point at which the nail meets the flesh.
Okay.
So I can, shall I demonstrate a little bit of what it's like to have a rough sound?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's an example of a sort
okay.
of semi-polished nail as opposed to...
Oh, big difference.
Yeah, big difference in terms of the quality and the color and the depth and the sort of resonance of the sound.
And you do that every single time before you play?
Every single time.
Because you have to.
Yes.
It's part of what a guitarist needs to do, right?
Well, if you don't mind making a bad sound, it's sort of you can leave it. But for any time that one sits down and plays seriously, it's you have to do it before you start.
Yeah. Bach composed these movements, the suite, for a lute. You're playing them on a 7-string guitar. What would be, say, the difference in sound?
So the guitar resonates for... a much longer period of time than a lute does. So just in that sense, there are some ways in which the guitar is more akin to just, it sort of sits between a Baroque violin and a lute maybe in terms of just what it's capable of by virtue of the sound that it makes. And it was important for me to play these on a guitar primarily since I'm a guitarist. And so there's this technical issue where if you want to play the lute, it has often double strings, and so you would have to cut your nails off. So there's this logistical challenge. So I decided I didn't want to go down that route, but that I still was interested in the historical sound, if you will, or in evoking an older kind of way of playing these pieces.
Mm-hmm. Will you play us another one?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
So... what shall I play?
Sarabande.
Oh, okay. So I'll play
How about that one?
The Sarabande from the Suite for Lute in E minor.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's very pretty. Thank you so much, really. You know, I was really wanted to ask you about the Bach Project, because not only did it enable you to have kind of pursue a scholarly interest in Bach's music, as well as perform, and, you know, eventually actually record an album, the album, but there's a community component to this as well. And what is that? Explain that a little bit.
Yeah, so I discovered the importance of community music when I was a student at Germantown Friends School here in Germantown here in Philadelphia. And it started with a project to offer some guitar instruction to students at St. Barnabas, which is a school across the street, just as an after-school thing for me and for them at the time. And what started to happen is that the students became more and more engaged with the guitar through the lessons, and then they started coming to concerts, and then they started putting on their own concerts. And as part of seeing that, for me, really opened my eyes to how important it was to make sure, at a very fundamental, that people have access to music. And I also thought back to my own experiences as a student at GFS, and we were incredibly lucky to have, you know, Sarah Chang come and play to us every year, since she was also enrolled at school and is from the area. And that sort of thing really is the way that I knew how music could sound at a really high level. Mm. And that's what made me sort of fall in love with it, I think. And so I realized how important that was for me and also for the students that I was working with. And so when I had the opportunity in the context of the Kickstarter to try to open this up and involve community music in it, in the project, and in getting this music out to people, I really wanted to jump on that chance and to take advantage of that.
And as part of the Bach Project, would you like to bring this music into the Philadelphia schools? Have you thought about that?
Definitely. So it's definitely something that I'm really interested in doing. In terms of the concrete partnerships, that's still being worked out in terms of the details. Mm-hmm. But it's something that I'm 100% committed to doing and really very excited about. So who knows?
You know, I have to ask you, I'm sure you've been asked this before, but I'm going to ask anyway. You know, the guitar, rock music, the Beatles, all that stuff, Pink Floyd, etc. What made you more interested in the classical guitar? It's a lot of work.
Well, I definitely wanted to be a rock star, so there is no question about that.
Okay.
And then it was, so we're really lucky in Philadelphia to have this great organization called the Philadelphia Classical Guitar Society. And when I was a kid, my teacher, Emiliano, sent me to a concert of Jorge Morel, who is a fantastic, I believe, Argentine guitarist. And he had a concert at a church, I don't remember exactly where it was, somewhere downtown in Philadelphia. And I went and I was smitten. I mean, it was like nothing I'd ever heard before. And at that point, I said, well, maybe I could, you know, keep doing that. And then I'd already sort of started having lessons. And I think what kept me with the classical guitar was the sound of the nylon strings. There's something very evocative for me about that. And, you know, there's that famous Chopin quotation that we're not sure is accurate, but the only thing more beautiful, or no, that there's nothing more beautiful than the sound of one classical guitar playing itself, save perhaps two. And,
okay,
you know,
yeah.
For me, that's what got me. I think it was the sound itself.
Uh-huh. So. And you've been hooked for a while.
Yeah, I've been hooked for a while.
Will you, there's another selection you're going to play from, it's the E minor suite,
yes.
Right? What is that?
So that, I think, is the bourrée that actually has some rock fame.
Okay.
So people might recognize it. And it's interesting because the bourrée, in these dance suites, a lot of the dances that Bach was sort of vamping on, to borrow a phrase, were already either arcane or were not so commonly danced in court at the time. And he was sort of writing stylistic homage or things that are just take advantage of the internal rhythm, you know, for musical purposes, for compositional purposes. But this bourrée actually is danceable as such, and to a step count that was still very much in fashion during his life.
Huh.
So it's interesting in that it's a little different from you know, some of the other movements. But like the first movement in this suite, it's also in the French style.
Okay.
So a French bourrée.
Thank you. That was very, very pretty, really. And you recorded this album at the Abbey Road Studio. And, you know, I'd really like to ask you, what made you want to do that? Except for the obvious reasons.
Well, it's iconic.
There are probably others.
As you know. Yeah, so there were some others for me. The first is that I started working with some interactive architects on a virtual reality project to go along with the album. And one of the things that we needed was a studio that could deal with the technical requirements of creating a three-dimensional sound field in space. So what that allows you to do is that as you're part of the virtual reality experience, if you move in the room, the sound will change according to your movements. But that requires some technical wherewithal in terms of getting the microphones in phase, and you know, as microphones happen as the sound travels at different speeds to different parts of the room, there are some real technical challenges associated with that, and so that's something that Abbey Road was equipped to deal with.
So that was
just a good technical reason to do it. But there was also this sort of emotional and musical reason for me, which is that one of my favorite recordings in terms of the actual sound of the album is Manuel Barueco's recording of Some Time Ago, which he did in Abbey Road some 25 years ago, or maybe even a little more.
Oh, my.
In Studio 3. And one of the things that I wanted to do was go after a similar sound. Now, Manuel sort of found it to be a little torturous, I think, that, you know, the microphone's all around him and you can barely move, and it's a little bit like, you know, a little claustrophobic in a way, I guess. But I was really excited about that just because I liked the sound so much.
Sure.
So yeah. I jumped at the opportunity to do it. Now, Simon Rhodes, who engineered Some Time Ago, as the way it works in Abbey Road is that, you know, as you climb the ranks, you do bigger and bigger things. And so Simon's last project, or one of them, you know, was The Ring, or, you know, with these ring, you know, the films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he had someone who had learned with him called Lewis Jones, who was very much aware of that aesthetic and that kind of sound. And Lewis did an incredible job of engineering this album, which I think you'll, if you listen to the recorded seven-string Bach album, you'll get to hear his work, and it's really something else.
Ah, lovely. Well, now I think now you're going to play from the E major suite, right?
Yes. So
okay. This
is Allure. Now, the Allure is also an interesting dance because it's slow in 6-4, which really means it's in these two very big beats. So it dances, but it dances very slowly. And it was also one of the ones that was, it's French, but it was arcane already at the time that Bach was using it. And it's the only Allure that we know of that he wrote. Now, it's possible there were other ones that have gotten lost, but in terms of extant pieces, This is it.
Okay, good. Thanks. Thank you, Michael. It's beautiful. I'm Meredy Duddleston. I'm here in the WRTI Performance Studio with classical guitarist Michael Pohl, who has been playing selections from his new album, Seven String Bach. It's based on the Bach Project, which was kind of a two-year project in which he studied and transcribed Bach's music for the lute to the seven-string guitar, which you had especially made for yourself, right?
Yes.
It's absolutely beautiful music. What do you think? Are you going to take another turn at Bach when you're done with this?
I hope so. I plan on going around again with some of the, maybe with one of the violin partitas that I'm working on arranging now. And also there are a couple of other lute suites that particularly benefit from the low bass. And so I'm looking at some of those now as well. And that should keep me busy for, you know, another decade or so.
But before you came to Philadelphia, and you came just, what, in the last couple weeks or so?
Yeah, just a few days ago.
A few days ago. Okay. Before you came, you had been in London, I think touring around somewhat, not just London, but other parts of the UK, and you've been doing concerts based on some of the music in your album. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
And you were at a concert in London, and there was, I think, you didn't end with Bach. You ended with something else.
Yes. So I didn't prepare much by way of encore for any of these concerts, which turned out to be insufficient in one case, or in a couple of cases, but particularly in London. And I was really stunned by how positively people reacted to a little bit of Spanish music on the back of Bach. So then I mentioned that to you, and you love that idea.
Now we're coming into the 20th century, right?
Yes. So okay. This is a piece written by Federico Moreno Toroba, who was writing around the time of the Spanish Civil War, and he wrote a very evocative piece about the Spanish landscape, I believe during his time in exile, but I'm not sure exactly when he wrote it.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but it's the first movement is called Fandanguillo, and it's referential, sort of like Bach, to forms from other places. The Fandango was a transatlantic form in the sense that it was sort of designed in Mexico and then got reappropriated back to Spain. And it's very, it has the flavor of the Spanish landscape.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much. You have been listening to Michael Pohl in the WRTI Performance Studio. We've been streaming this on Facebook Live. We're going to go back to Jack with our radio and our radio audience, and we'll continue this for a brief period on Facebook Live. Back to you, Jack.